Hello, everyone. This is Bill Knauer, and this is Author to Author, where we talk about writing and life, because what it takes to write the book you want to write is also what it takes to lead the life you most want to lead. Author to Author is brought to you by Author Magazine, the premier free writing magazine on the internet, featuring articles on writing and the writing life, as well as video and audio interviews with best-selling and award-winning authors across the genres. You can find Author Magazine at authormagazine.org. And we're funded by the Pacific Northwest Writers Association, supporting writers from pen to publication since 1955. You can learn more about the PNWA at pnwa.org. So let's see. Excuse me. I'm going to be teaching a class. If you're a member of the PNWA, I will be teaching a class in memoir, which is appropriate for today's show. But so the first class is going to be this Saturday, the 25th. So you can go to PNWA.org and sign up for that if you want. It's going to be a three-part class. We're going to deal with story this week and then character and voice after that. So if you're interested in writing a memoir or you're writing a memoir and want to take a class from me, you can do so. Sign up at PNWA.org. Like I said, it's memoir, and I've got a memoirist with me today. You know, I was born in 1965, which meant that I grew up and came of age in the 70s and early 80s, which also meant that I grew up watching what we called the Battle of the Sexes being fought in the newspapers and in classrooms and across dinner tables. And it was a subject that really had my attention because I liked girls. I liked the opposite sex. I liked their company, both romantically and otherwise. But I saw there was a lot that needed to be hashed out. There's a lot of history, a little bit of bad blood. And like I said, it was a subject that much had my attention and always has, really. And I don't normally talk about it on this show, but I may have a chance to today because my guest is journalist and author Kate Montana, whose memoir, Unearthing Venus, My Search for the Woman Within, takes a look at her own search for true feminine power and what it is and what it isn't, and how her life's journey in many ways is the discovery of that. And I'm just thrilled to have her on the show with me today. Kate, welcome to Author to Author.
Wonderful to be here, Bill.
Kate,
thank
are you there? Oh, good.
I'm here.
You're welcome. I can hear that. That's so good. What a relief. You certainly sound here. So as I mentioned, you're an author and a journalist, but this, and you've written a couple other books, including, with someone I'm a fan of, Dr. Darren Weissman, The Heart of the Matter, and also Ghetto mm-hmm. Physics, Redefining the Game with Will Arntz and E. Raymond Brown. This, I believe, is your first completely solo project, is that right?
That's correct. Yes, it is. And what a startlement to write a memoir after spending 20-odd years in journalism.
Yeah, it's a very different animal, isn't it?
Oh, entirely. It snuck up on me. About the last thing I ever thought in my entire life, Bill, was that I would write a memoir.
Really?
But, Well, I was a journalist. Come on, you don't use the I pronoun. And I haven't counted the word I in my book, but it's in there quite a bit. It was very discomforting. And forget the journalistic kind of superior, I will assess and be cool and calm about this and unemotional and removed and subjective. This is, as objective as it gets.
Well, it has
and
to be.
And it was hard taking off the professional journalism hat and going deep within and revealing, being so revealing.
But now here's the thing, though, it is hard, and you didn't have to do it. You could have said, "Nah, I've got a career. It's a nice career, and this is really mm-hmm. uncomfortable, and I'm going to make a hash out of it, and people are going to read it and get the wrong idea, and da-da-da." But you didn't do that. You went and finished it.
No.
So why did you go ahead and finish it if it was so challenging?
Well, it's actually, I tried to write this book three or four times. I started my first draft in 1999. The seed for this book occurred in 1999 when I was working as editor-in-chief, Northwest Bureau chief of Indian Country Today, and I was doing an interview with a man by the name of John Perkins. And we got to talking about gender and gender roles in Amazonian tribes in South America. And he told me this amazing story about this tribe called the Shuar tribe down there, where men and women are considered incredibly equal. Men and women have equal say on tribal council, but their role as far as day-to-day living is highly gender-specific. Guys do guy things. They hunt, they fish, they cut down trees to make canoes and huts, and the women do the domestic chores, raise the children. But he said there was one task that the Shuar tribe did that women could perform, and that the survival of the tribe depended on women performing this one job. And I was just like, wow, well, okay, tell me, what is it? I'll bite. And he said, you know, the tribe really understands sexual roles. They understand that men and women are different. They have different qualities and characteristics. They have different strengths and weaknesses. And they consciously try to have men and women work together so that they play to each other's strengths rather than doing this, you know, this the battle of the sexes routine that the West is so fond of. And he said, and as a result, he said, they know that the men will hunt and fish until there's nothing left to hunt or fish. They're very doing task, goal-oriented creatures, very competitive and driven. And they understand that the women are very community-oriented, socially oriented, very intuitive and connected with the needs of the community. And that includes the needs in the environment. He said, so the men depend upon the women to tell them when to stop. And when you said that, it stopped me in my tracks. I was like, what? How can women tell men to do anything, let alone stop what it is they enjoy doing? And then, of course, the whole thing went a few steps further. As you know, I wrote the article, and that was that. But that one story stuck with me. And he kept saying, he said, well, you know, what that's the problem with our society is that we women don't know how to stop any more than the men do. I certainly didn't. I'd been raised in the 50s and 60s to be a liberated woman. And I realized I'd been raised like a guy. I'd been raised to hunt and fish and cut down all the trees, and I didn't know how to stop.
Yeah.
And so I was just on this huge it just set me on fire, changed my life, Bill. And
yeah.
I wanted to write about male-female dynamics. I wanted to expose this. I wanted to understand my own part in this. And so I started, as per usual, my normal nonfiction approach to, you know, I studied brainwave states and, you know, the difference
between
archetypal. You know, I studied archetypes of male and masculine and feminine.
Yeah. Yeah.
I studied it, and then I tried to regurgitate what I'd learned.
Yeah.
And I did about three passes on this book, and each time I got to chapter four. And each time I just stopped and discussed and went, well, crap, there is something so absent in this. There's something so missing, but I don't know what it is. So fast forward another 10 years, I'd given up on doing that until I met a guy, a guru from the East, who was very much upset about bringing goddess awareness, goddess temples even, from India to the United States to initiate more of a feminine consciousness in the United States, because, you know, he was all about, you know, if we don't get into our heart-based values in the West, and the whole world emulates the West and wants to be like us and wear the Nikes and have flat-screen TVs, and they don't see the price that we're paying or the resource depletion, et cetera. He said, you know, if the West doesn't get into their heart, into more feminine spaces within, the whole world is just going to go over a freaking cliff. So I was like, aha, I can write about this guy's understanding of the goddess.
This will make
a great book. So you see where I just had my head in my journalism camp, and I kept myself out of the story. And so he set me the task of actually writing a story. I was going to write the book with him, for him. He was excited about the project. I was about excited. We met, and somehow he sussed out that wasn't the story I was supposed to write. I was supposed to write something about the feminine that came from me. And he pulled the plug on the project the very first time I met to interview him. You know, and I walked in the door with a tape recorder and 75 questions to ask him.
So funny, Kate. You know why? Because it's a great story, and you relate it just beautifully in the book. And reading the book, and see, this is how it always is. This is how it, when you read this book, you would think, how could this woman not know that she needs to tell her story of the relationship between men and women and herself and her own femininity and her sexuality? And it just seems like your life is a seminar in that question. And yet, it is. And it's like you're sitting on it, but it takes him saying, what is woman? It was he who said that, right?
Uh-huh.
What is woman?
Yes,
to get you to say, to
what
look
What do you
at
know
your...
about woman is what he asked me.
What do you know about woman? That's right. What do you know about woman? And it's very funny phrasing that he used, that he chose to say it in that sort of quirky syntax. And your life has been all about that question, really. And you've been asking it your whole life. It seems like from the way you wrote it, at least.
I didn't know it. I didn't have a clue, Bill. When he asked me that question, what do you know about woman? And I flat out couldn't answer him. Which horrified me at a whole new level. I was like, "Oh my God, I'm 50 odd years old, and I've been a woman all this, and I can't answer the most fundamental question." So, talk about back to the drawing board. So I went home and I sat with a pen and paper at my knee and just going, "Okay, a story about the feminine, my kingdom for a story, anything, a poem, music, otherwise doesn't matter, anything." And what finally showed up was that I had to write my own, because at a certain point, you know, story and myth and parable and metaphor are really, really great. But they only take us so far, and people love people's genuine stories about how they've learned and grown and changed and what they've absorbed from life. And so I was like, oh, God, okay, yeah, I'll do it. And it wasn't until I started writing that through this lens of what is the feminine, what is feminine power, and asking myself, you know, and of course the other question, the flip side of the question is, well, why aren't women powerful, and where is my power, and what is my power, and what isn't my power, and all of those gender questions, that my life started to tell me the answers. But only until I started ransacking my closets about with those questions in mind.
Yeah, and you know, you had a great gift because, so I mentioned in my intro, I'm teaching part one of a memoir class starting this Saturday, and I've done it before, and one of the things when I talk to people about writing memoir, it's always like, like your life, and I should say to the readers, Kate really tells, although not every detail because it's impossible, but she uses the arc of your entire life to tell this story, really beginning it in quite young and taking you up right to now, more or less, but you have to focus that. There's more to your life that's in this book than is in this book, obviously. There's a whole bunch of stuff.
More.
A whole bunch of stories you could tell. But you focused it. You focused your entire life around this question. And it gave it a center, a core to it, without which the story could just sprawl and sprawl and sprawl. So it really had a center from word one, I felt.
Absolutely, it did, and I think that's probably one. Not knowing anything about the memoir genre, except that I've written and published a memoir, I can say I bet that is probably one of the crucial things to the art of writing memoir. Is not to. It's just like, oh well, as you say, this endless sprawl about, well, the story of my life. It's like, well, okay, but what about the story of your life? What's really, really interesting? What do you want to focus on? And then write around that. I think that it was a very powerful, looking back, I can say it was a very powerful tool and way to approach it. And for me, the only way to approach it.
Yes, and the wonderful thing about rewriting, see, I preach the power of writing the memoir and how useful it is. I like to read them, and also how valuable it is to the writer, that it's therapy. I don't care what you say. When you go into that book, you are on your own couch, and there's no way around it, because you have to retell the story of your life in a way that is useful to another human being, right?
Exactly.
And you can, and you had some stuff done to you, or people did things in relationship with you that were not so nice, and it was pretty rough. But no matter how brutal, and almost everybody who writes a memoir has had something. A lot of time there's abuse or there's terrible, you know, environments that they're living in. You can't be a victim. You just cannot be a victim. It just doesn't work.
No. Ever. No. And it's a fascinating and delicate balance, Bill. I remember the first pass or two that I made on the date rape scene when I was in college.
Yeah.
And one of my best friends read it, and her feedback was like, wow, I feel like I'm reading a newspaper report of somebody's rape. And I was like,
yeah.
Okay, well, that isn't going to work. And so I had to go back in, and I had to relive it, which is, you know,
yeah.
the last thing anybody really wants to do. But, you know, one of the things that I've really understood about the human psyche in the past, in the writing of this book and in the past couple of years since I finished and then the publishing process, which is a whole other story, is that we're tremendously wounded, and it's all locked in our bodies at a cellular level, at a soul level. And it's, you know, we really don't become integrated, healthy human beings until we unlock the dark within us as well as the light. And
absolutely.
So to go back into, yeah, and so to go in and face those moments, those dark moments, and really feel it, hear the voices, hear what your feelings have to say about what happened, see it in your mind's eye. You know, we all have the, you know, see, feel, hear, the different, you know, we actually function differently, and we have different fortes in how we in our perceptual basis of the world. But
sure.
It's like once you go through that, you're through it. It's not
yeah.
that it might not still be painful, but it's like popping a zit. You've gotten to the root core of the infection. And after
yeah.
that, it's all uphill. It's just really a lot, or downhill, I don't know which way you want to say, but it's easier. Life becomes
yeah.
easier. The pain, the real bad part of the pain is released.
Yeah.
And I think
story.
Memoir as a healing tool is an enormous gift for people.
Absolutely.
But as
this
you
is
say,
perfect.
You can't go in there. Yeah, exactly. But as you just said, you can't go in there and bleed all over the page either. Oh, woe is me, and this
right.
happened, and then they did that, and then they said that. It's like, ew. Even, you know,
yeah.
you know, you're not even interested in that. Why would somebody else be? So there's that delicate balance of...
There is,
yeah.
And on the website right now, on Author, this current issue, there's interviews with Amy Tan and Theo Pauline-Nestor and Nicola Griffith. Now, Theo Pauline-Nestor is a memoirist and teaches at the University of Washington. And so in the interview, she says something great. She's actually quoting somebody else, but I love mm-hmm. this. The quote is, "Self-pity is the bestiality of emotions. Everyone despises it." I think it's really true. You can't get away with it. And it's okay because... The pain we feel, this has been the case for me, and I write about my own life to the exclusion of all other topics now, as a matter of fact. And
interesting.
I have to rewrite the story of my life. And the pain I have from my past is all a story I told about what happened. It's never about what happened. It's the story I told about it. It's the story I told about it. I've seen this again
mm-hmm.
and again and again
mm-hmm.
and again. And, mm-hmm. and you know what it reminds me of, Kate, is that so when you write – and, of course, you may not have recognized this doing journalism, but you might have begun to get a glimpse of this doing memoir. But I've only written creatively. I've done very little journalism in my life.
Mm-hmm.
It's that
mm-hmm.
the hardest thing, the thing you cannot write convincingly is physical pain. You can say it was searing or burning or – you can all these adjectives. You can pile on the adjectives, and yet it never really recreates the experience. But if you want to describe emotional pain, that you can do.
Mm-hmm.
That
mm-hmm.
your readers understand,
mm-hmm.
that will live with them. Which I think says something about the nature of what we actually are, in my opinion. I don't know. What do you think about
we're
that?
These amazing spiritual beings.
Yes.
What were
and
you saying?
I say that's what your book is. It's actually, in the end, it's just a spiritual journey, isn't it? To your sort of spiritual center.
You know.
Would you say that's true?
Ultimately, yes. And, you know, it's one of the fascinating things this book has taught me is that I entered into the whole kind of New Age, New Thought paradigm, oh, God, 30 years ago, because regular church, Sunday church religion, whether it was, you know, Episcopalian that I was raised in or the Catholic church I went to was, you know, in high school, It just didn't do it for me. It seemed way too childish and literal, and so I went into a whole different arena, and thinking that I had uncovered the spiritual aspect of my being, and I really understood my soul and all those words. And what has amused me is I've come to realize that when Sadhguru, the man who I was going to interview, asked me, what do you know about woman? And I couldn't answer him. I've asked that question in workshops since then. What is a woman? What is a man? We can't even answer that, let alone, well, what is a soul and what is a spirit? And let alone, what is God? So
right.
We're really groping around in the dark, and I have come to realize for myself personally that dealing with these gender issues and expanding our understanding and our definitions of masculine and feminine, male, female, are a tremendous way to expand into the realm of our spiritual reality, because you say the words man and woman, and we're focused on gender. We're focused on opposition. We're focused on body parts and how they fit together. We're focused on sexuality. Yeah. And that's all well and good and wonderful, but we're missing just in vast territories of our character that are archetypal. The Chinese Taoist system of yin and yang is everything in the world has masculine and feminine characteristics to it. You know, a fire is considered hot and heat is considered yang. Water and fluidity is considered yin and feminine. The intellectual, left brain, logical, structured thought processes are masculine. Again, the more fluid, and I'll even use the word chaotic, non-linear processes of creative processes, the right brain of feminine. And these are qualities, and they are literally archetypal, and they expand our view of ourselves once we hunker down and start to look at ourselves in these terms. And that's what fascinated me, back to the beginning of this conversation, of what the Shwa tribe down in the Amazon were addressing. They were looking at men and women far beyond a matter of sexuality and body parts, and embracing what we are and our characteristics, our strengths and weaknesses and traits, what we embody, the gifts we bring to the table on this earthly plane, and how to best utilize them.
Yeah.
So it's an extraordinary journey, and the book has taught me all of this. I didn't know any of this 4 years ago.
Isn't that great? You write the book. See, I'm writing this memoir, and it's called No One Is Broken, and it's because of this relationship I have with my son who's diagnosed on the autism spectrum, and it lit up all the stuff, and I knew it was true that no one was broken, but I couldn't tell you why or how, and so I said, well, I'll have to write the book to find out. You have to write it to find out.
Yes.
Even though I knew it was true. I knew it, and you couldn't have talked me out of it, but I couldn't express it to you or tell you why, so I had to write a book to learn why. Isn't that funny?
Isn't that fascinating?
You know, it's you start. It's interesting. At one point, you it got me thinking, because you talked about this sort of, just like you were talking about the yin and the yang, and the two, that what we think of as the masculine qualities and the feminine qualities. And I thought, it's so interesting, because I've always thought of within me are the feminine qualities, and within me are masculine qualities, and that to make a baby, before there was science to muck about with it, that you had to have male and female. And I thought, to make a story, to write a book, I require the male and the female, and that there's that male side, which is, I want to make something. I got to make stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, make it with my hands, even though it's a book. But that's that, that I always think of as a very male drive. But in order to make the book, I have to rely on receptivity, intuition, and stillness. Those are the three. Without that, you really can't write the book. And so in order to create the book, I have to marry this one male drive and this other female approach. Does that make sense?
Oh, totally. Totally. Because
to create
I could have written – exactly. I can write endlessly. I've written books. I've written articles. It's easy to sit down and do a story. But to write this memoir, I had to be the story. And I had to become – that which I was writing about. And that was the magic aha that I got when I realized I needed to write this as a memoir, because it took me a couple of weeks to come to that, of reluctant chewing on it to come to that realization. I was highly resistant to writing a memoir. But I finally understood why I was set the task. And I finally understood what had been missing in those three, four other aborted attempts at writing about the masculine and the feminine. It's because I had been missing. The feminine had been missing. I could not pontificate endlessly from a linear, intellectual, structured, detailed, left brain, place. But what was missing was the heart.
Right.
What was missing was the soul, the guts, the lyricism, the personal part.
Amen.
That sundered, surrendered being place that we have to go to for all art to occur.
Absolutely. And this is why it drives me crazy when I hear sort of public policy people trying to drive women into left brain careers. There's nothing, if they want to go into left brain careers, go there by all means, but do not sacrifice all that is in that they feel drawn to in the right brain stuff. There's so much, I come from an artistic background where it's largely right brain. And so when I hear this drive to bring everybody into the left brain world, it drives me nuts. It's like, at least half the population is still trying to dwell there and know what's valuable about that. Don't tell them that the only way to be smart is to be scientifically smart or mathematically smart or argumentatively and academically smart. That's merely one. Oh, it drives me nuts, Kate. It's only one version.
Right. Well, that's the level of marginalization of the feminine that I've understood writing this book. I didn't see any of that before I started off. Because it's like the water, it's the water. It's the amniotic fluid we're raised in. We have a very left brain functioning masculine society. I was liberated to be to work like a man, think like a man, set goals like a man, even make love like a man. And that is many things, including an education on how to walk the masculine mile in their moccasins. But it's not ultimately the liberation of the feminine spirit at all.
No.
And so we're all locked into, and I've really come to view, and it seems simplistic, but it's so astoundingly large, Bill, is that I look at all, and I mean all of the ills of our world today, culturally, resource-wise, environmental, political greed, corporate greed, et cetera. And it's because we've all run to the left side of the boat. We're all sitting on the left-hand masculine. This is the only way. This is the competitive, hierarchical, top-down, top-dog, power-over viewpoint. This is the only way to live. The other way isn't valid. The feminine has been eschewed for thousands of years, marginalized and diminished and made small. And now we're all on one side of the boat, and the boat is slipping over.
But
it's really astounding
once you start
looking at it this way.
It is changing. It is changing.
It is changing.
It is changing.
Absolutely.
It is changing in my son's generation. It's changed some. I'm like a half a generation behind you. It is changing because when things are out of balance, they must come back into. And it's really not. And to me, because I'm a man, I'm not going to bash my brothers and me.
No.
But it is about finding balance within all of us. Okay, so we've got about 90 seconds left. If this book taught you anything, Kate, what did it teach you? What did you come away knowing?
It teaches me that we're all ultimately the same. We all have masculine and feminine within us, and that to be integrated, balanced, happy, productive, creative people, we have to tap into both sides of our humanity, and that it's not in an oppositional way, but is complementarity. We are all whole ultimately, and to grasp this and these different traits, and then go out and not be afraid to live that. That's the key. And eventually, as you say, things are changing. Eventually, as we all grasp these larger patterns and ways of being in ourselves, our society will be able to live differently, make different choices, and our society will reflect that.
Good answer, Kate. Unearthing Venus, My Search for the Woman Within. Thank you so much. We're right down to the wire. Good luck with this. Get out there. And I hope I get to see you face-to-face sometime.
I would love it, Bill. Thank you so much.
Thank you. All right, everybody. Oh, we got to go. It's almost time, but be a whole person. Be a left brain. Be a right brain. Be your whole self. You'll be happier, and the world will basically be a better place. Talk to Claire Dieterer next week, another memoirist. Till then, do what you love. Write what you love. Love what you love. or wrong.